Good morning, good morning, good morning. Happy Wednesday, happy hump day,
Morning.
happy day to be here with me, with all of our guests. So I want to thank you for joining in. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and we have been having an amazing conversation backstage. So I know you're going to enjoy today's guest, but I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. Every day, weekdays at 8 a.m., I ask you for the same thing, and that is for you to go ahead and share the show, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. I mean, who would want their friend to have all this information, have all this knowledge, meet all these great people, and not tell them? I don't think that's making for a really good friend. So let's be good friends today and go ahead and share. And while you are sharing the show, I'm going to do my part and I'm going to introduce our first guest. And our first guest is Stacy Garcia. And Stacy is a serial entrepreneur. Good morning, Stacy. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm great. Thank you. I was going to say I'm a little more awake over here because I'm in New York. So, you know, it's midday here. I felt bad for the West Coast people.
Yes. Everybody's like, how can you do this show at 8? It's because, first of all, I wake up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I get everything ready for the show. And then I'm one of those people that like to get things over with and get it done. And then I can go on with other things. So that's why I like the 8 a.m. time slot. Stacy, when did you realize that you were an entrepreneur? What made you realize that that's who you were?
You know, I don't know that I realized it really until I started in my head thinking about going into business. So that was in my 20s. But I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. So everybody kind of owned small businesses. The legend has it, my great grandfather was a textile salesman back in Germany. And that was, you know, before World War II. And I ended up ultimately in the textile business, which my grandmother was always really proud of because she felt like it came full circle. But yeah, I think, you know, growing up around people who were in business, running small companies, sort of just hearing about the different challenges and struggles, it sort of seeps into your being at that point.
I just asked that because that's what I wrote my book on. It's called Signs You Might Be an Entrepreneur, How to Discover the Entrepreneur in You. And I wrote it because I would hear people literally say, oh, I'm an entrepreneur because I hate my boss. Like, I can't do a commute, so I'm an entrepreneur. And I'm like, it takes a little bit more to be an entrepreneur than you don't want to work a 9-to-5. So I was just interested on your thoughts on that aspect.
Yeah, well, it's funny because when I really did finally make the leap and go into my own business, I started planning it while I was pregnant with my first child and then launched it right after I had him. But I was under the guise, you know, and really misguided that exactly like you described, you know, that, oh, yes, you know, as an entrepreneur, or as a business owner, I would have control over my time. You know, I was going to have this wonderful life work balance because I was a new mom and starting a new company. And what you realize very quickly is that to get a company off the ground, whatever the size is, really takes, you know, that thrust and that rocket fuel. And that requires lots of hours and lots of tinkering and lots of, you know, just sort of chipping away at it. So it was definitely probably twice as many hours as I would have worked at a normal 9-to-5 job, but I didn't have the commute. And ultimately it ended up being worth putting in that time because, you know, it was for myself.
Most of the self-employed entrepreneur business owners that I speak with describe being an entrepreneur more as a calling than as a job. You know, it's one of those expressions where people say, and I truly believe if you do what you love, you will never work a day in your life. So when you go past working 8 hours or 10 hours, you're not thinking, oh my God, you know, when am I off work? You're thinking, oh, I'm having the best time of my life. I'm learning, I'm experiencing. Was that true?
I think there is definitely not even a question that some of that is true. I mean, that's what has to keep you going, right? Like mm-hmm. the fire in your belly, the passion for whatever it is that you want to bring to the table. That's what keeps you going. But because if you don't have that, you're dead in the water, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's why when you look at the statistics and they say half of businesses fail in the first year, if you don't have that grit and that passion, it's not worth probably starting it in the first place. So you have to be really hyper committed to it. But I mean, certainly there were sleepless nights, you know, many sleepless nights over the first 2 years of getting the business off the ground. As I said, I was a young mother. I leveraged my townhouse. So we had, you know, been new homeowners. I was in my 20s and I borrowed $50,000, which was basically my entire life savings, in a home equity line to start a business. And I remember, you know, truly not sleeping for like 2 years, just being worried that my house would be taken away. Like, and thankfully, blessedly, you know, I tell the story, I go, well, we knew we wouldn't be homeless, but the thought of living with my mother-in-law was like very motivating.
Okay. No, but it's when we hear it, it's like, okay, $50,000, everything worked out fine. It all worked out well. Well, what are some of the lessons you learned? Would you still have taken out that $50,000 loan? Do you see other options that you didn't see back then?
No, I really did knock on a lot of doors in the beginning. So I probably spent the first 18 months pitching to other companies, you know, really trying to kind of get this off the ground as a licensing business. It was originally my dream was to sort of create partnerships with companies, have them license my designs, not have the risk in terms of inventory or investment in the same way. But it was really hard to get companies to invest in an unknown, which is what I was at that time. So I ended up kind of, to me, I didn't see any other option. And, you know, I'm a big believer. So I believe, you know, God laid that path for me. And sometimes the doors close and you feel really frustrated, but you have to sort of trust that there's a reason for that. And so, you know, you stop banging your head against those doors and you go find the one that's going to open for you. And so for me, the one that opened was the ability to borrow against the home, take this money, and with the encouragement of my husband, who was an accountant. So he had that background. He sort of said, well, what do you need these companies for? Why can't you just go and produce your own textile line? You know, what do you need them for? So I'm a designer by training. And, you know, my dream was to create the Stacy Garcia brand of designs, bring this passion for art and design forward. And I kind of said, you know, well, I'm not sure what I need them for, I guess the money. And he said, well, here's the access to the money. You know, let's figure this out. And, you know, basically,
it felt
a little like going to Vegas. You know, I kind of felt like, you know, putting it all on black, you know, it's like, it felt a little like gambling in the beginning, but, you know, hindsight being 2020, it's like, I look truly 20 years later and say, wow, like, it's pretty amazing what, you know, myself, again, the encouragement, of my husband, and then ultimately the team that I built over the years, what we were able to accomplish and turn that $50,000 into, you know, a business that's generated millions of dollars in revenues over the last 20 years. So it was a great investment. But like I said, it took, you know, great commitment and probably 2 years of sleepless nights. And, you know, a little bit now as an entrepreneur, you have those waves, like it happens again and you go, all right, just, you know, you've been here before.
Yes, I think a lot of people are going through those ways right now in this current environment. I think it's wonderful, and kudos to your husband for supporting you, not just because he's an accountant. I mean, I think that's a major boon to have an accountant that's a husband, but to have a husband who supports you in your dreams, because not everyone does that. Some people would have been like, $50,000, are you crazy? Here's the divorce papers. And yeah. I've been divorced twice. So I've had these conversations and I completely get it. So Stacy, bring us up to date. What are you working on these days?
Yeah, you know, it's been exciting, and my career trajectory has always been that sort of, okay, you know, envision it, take those steps against it. And I was just reflecting back with one of my team members. She's my right hand. Her name's Amy, and she's been with me 14 years, and she now has the title creative director. So she really helps me run the business. But we call manifesting. I mean, we've sort of created these ideas and then made them happen over the years. So one of them was a new brand. Once I got the textile company off the ground, I started, the licensing business did take shape. So I had to start with a different business model with this textile model. And once I was there and started making a name for myself, it was much easier to get other companies, other manufacturers to come in and say, sure, we'd love to license a Stacy Garcia lamp or table or whatever. So we've grown that. I kind of spun it off into a second business, into a separate licensing business. We focused for the last 16 years with that business on hospitality. We design products for hotels and resorts. but really wanted to make the leap into residential. And so we created a new brand. Again, it was sort of an idea. You know, we did the mood board, the vision board. We were pinning up who we want our customers to be. And ultimately, we pitched a couple of large companies, but we had QVC who bit down on it and took the brand. So I do collections on QVC. I've gone live. It was certainly an experience. I kept waiting for Bradley Cooper to peek out like the movie Joy. You
know. Wow. No, you have a great story, a great experience. I definitely want to ask you more questions, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Dr. Anthony Weiner. He is a podiatrist who has a holistic approach to your foot. Good morning, Dr. Anthony. How are you?
Hey, good morning to you and everyone else. Hi, everyone.
What is your shirt saying?
Pardon me? Oh, it says, Stop Be Pain Fast. That's the name of my organization, my business. And it has my lovely name here, Dr. Weiner, on the other side.
Okay, so you're a podiatrist, but you have your own views on the foot and having a holistic approach. And I just kind of wonder, like, it's the foot. How many approaches can you have to it? Did I lose Dr. Weiner?
Let's see.
I'm sorry, it was breaking up the little... Yeah.
Did you hear my question? Okay, I think we're going to have to come back.
Yeah, could you repeat that? Yeah, this is better now. Yeah.
I like your office. Back. You got all the little things in the back there. No, I said, okay.
You got all my knickknacks back there. Yeah. See, my wife doesn't want them at the house, so I got to take them here to the office. So I just keep them here. I got my little man cave.
How many approaches to the foot are there?
Well, there's, you know, you have a holistic, which is, you know, I look at the whole body, you know, because your feet are the foundation to the whole entire body. And if there's an issue with the feet, it'll cause problems with your knees, hip, back. And I really get into a little alternative medicine, a little Eastern, Western, sort of combine them. But as far as to answer your question, you know, there's conservative treatment, you know, there's Eastern medicine, there's Western medicine. You know, there's surgical approaches for patients, you know, they're in, but I look at it like as far as, you know, your feet, they're a very intricate part of the body. And I get into like earthing and grounding, like just by, you know, something as simple as taking your shoes and socks off and allowing your feet to touch Mother Earth. There's a lot of healing that can go on with something as simple as that I try to bring forth and educate people on. And then that's where I wrote a book called Whole Foot Revolution. It's a proven way to basically heal your mind, body, and soul. And that came out probably about a year ago, but it goes into a lot of these sort of a different approach and way to be able to heal not only your body and your health, but also your mind and your soul, because I think everything all works together. So that's what's interesting about the feet. That's why I sort of have a different approach to that more than any other foot and ankle surgeons like myself. So, yeah, I do surgery, but I do other things too, not just surgery, but there's, you know, Tongren healing, there's quantum healing, there's, you know, just, you know, doing reflexology is just how, you know, the bottoms of your feet, they actually mirror each organ, gland, and body part of your of each individual. And just by, you know, I look at it like a little remote control, just by pushing a certain, we call them reflex points, it can actually, you know, help to rid, whether it be pain or someone has like a headache, or even if, you know, someone has anxiety, like right now with COVID-19, a lot of people are, you know, a lot of anxiety going on, a lot of stress, and there's little things you can do by doing like little reflex points on your feet that can allow your body just to sort of get a one with yourself. And even, you know, I get into meditation as well. I think meditation is important for people for their health. Nutrition, very, very important, and diet as well. So I know, I guess, yeah, I'm a foot and ankle specialist, but I look at, you know, there's more to body health and wellness than me just doing surgery on people's feet or, you know, tending to them conservatively. I want to be able to educate people on other modalities to heal them, which, you know, it's been around thousands of years, you know, even like herbs and, you know, teas and, you know, there's so many essential oils. I mean, you name it, there's, you know, coconut oil, there's CBD oil, which I implement, but I make sure it doesn't have the THC component in it. And that does a lot of great for patient. And as we're aware, you know, when you got chronic inflammation, it'll cause people to have pain. So, you know, the ultimate, you know, what we need to do is rid the inflammation. And there's a lot of real easy holistic modalities to do that. And it can help a lot of people suffering with, you know, whether it be arthritis or tendonitis, or even some of these autoimmune issues. So there's a lot of
there's
stuff.
I just enjoy
educating people on it.
Well, thank you for educating me, and thank you for educating us, because when I asked about being a podiatrist, I had no idea all this other information was involved, and I just love how passionate you are. Andrea, did you have a question?
I just have a quick question. So because it sounds like, you know, this holistic approach and perhaps surgery and other, you know, physical repairs are maybe like not the first resort. Do you counsel and...
Correct.
Treat patients online too, or is it only in your office?
But I will eventually be treating people online, because there is a certain treatment modality. It's actually called Tong Ren, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's actually where we use the subconscious. It's sort of a quantum healing, where you can actually heal somebody over, you know, whether it be a Zoom call like this, or it's just because everything, there's no time and no space. And we could actually, basically what we're doing is, a lot of people with diseases and illnesses, they have blockages in they're actually in the spinal cord. There's different, they're called Tui points. And what happens is that there's a gentleman that I learned from out near Harvard, his name's Tom Tam, and he has a really great healing system that unblocks certain blockages within the system, where once you unblock that, it'll allow your body to naturally heal. Because we, as human beings, you know, we could naturally heal ourselves. However, what happens is we have like blockages in our system, and those blockages are what causes a lot of these pathology and illnesses for individuals, and even a lot of autoimmune issues. People suffering with chronic pain or even, you know, even cancer, believe it or not. I had a friend of mine, he played football at University of Michigan, and he had a stage 4 prostate cancer. And his name's Chuck, and he's a good friend of mine. And he used a lot of these natural holistic modalities, including Tong Ren with Tom Tam. That's who he went to. And he actually helped to put his prostate in remission without going through like or chemo and stuff like that. So with me, I find it's, you know, it's my sole purpose to try to educate people on other, like if they have a loved one or someone that's suffering with an illness that doctors dismiss it and just say there's nothing that can be done. There is things that can be done. And I'm just giving the information, like in my book, I give all the resources and stuff for people to go to and be able to look at it and try to educate themselves, but also be able to do this on their own. A lot of this healing they could do at home on their own, or educate their loved one on it.
Yes, thank you. We always have to look for holistic and alternative options. Stay with me, Dr. Anthony. Don't go anywhere, mm-hmm. because I have plenty of questions for you.
Sure.
But all of our guests are being so patient. And I want to introduce our next guest. You may have seen her face before. She has been on the Roundtable Talk Show, and she was just asking questions. So I want to go ahead and introduce Andrea Hubbard. And she is someone I enjoy speaking with, because she also helps me with the conversation and with the questions. She is a design communication strategist. Good morning, Andrea. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. Good morning.
You always have the best questions.
Oh, Oh, thank you. I'm so curious. I'm like you. I'm just so curious.
Did you have a question for Stacey? Like, you didn't ask her how she did all that, how she made all that money? Like, I was waiting for that question.
I did have a question for Stacey, but you were on a roll, so I just...
Well, I guess that's a good thing. I'm not sure.
I was like, wait a minute, is this Andrea's show or is this Sharifa's show? It's Sharifa's show.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, because I point that out often. I like to remind people I can do what I want because this is my show.
Right.
How are you today? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Sure. So the Solopreneur Society is a partnership. Myself and my business partner, Dre, who coincidentally is also named Andrea. So talk about manifestation. I think I manifested myself in another person, and we partnered up, and we work with solopreneurs and small business owners on brand development, on compelling storytelling, on user events, and we do it through design. Dre is the design maverick. Like, it's amazing the design she comes up with. And then I help with the sales and marketing, and we just have a lot of fun disrupting the market on behalf of solopreneurs, because as single business owners or small business owners, we have a completely different, I'm going to say, fight than the large companies or businesses that are, you know, small or mid-sized businesses. And so we take it upon ourselves to do whatever we can within our wheelhouse to help support those who, you know, they need a chance, right? Kind of like what you were saying, Stacey. You know, they need somebody to take a chance on them. And so that's what we do. We help them.
Okay. Well, you know, I like to know specifics. So I'm looking for the $50,000 people to take a chance or ask Sharifa. So what is it that I need to know?
So what we would do with, you know, we would help you is figure out the platform, right? Like, what is the overall mess? This is what I would do. What is your overall messaging platform? And who is it that needs to hear what type of story based on that platform? I'm a huge believer in that we have multiple stories as small business owners to tell. And it depends on who the audience is, right? There's a story of the founding, which you told us in the very beginning. And it was just so natural, right? Because you knew that that's what we needed to know, right? But there's also the story of your vision, like, what is the vision? That's the story that Stacey was telling. So we would figure out all of the different stories and the audience that needs to hear them, and literally feet in the trenches, go out and tell those stories. And once you start telling the stories and then other people tell them and other people tell them, then that's when you're going to be able to start making the ask. That's how I would approach it.
That's what matters. And that's why I asked Andrea. that's why I ask all my guests all these questions, because I seriously want to know. I honestly want to know. I come here to learn, you know. And that's why my audience tunes in to the show, is because they want to learn. They want to learn the how. Have you done it? How are you doing it? What have you seen as successful? What have you seen as work? What should I completely stay away from? You know, and sometimes it is difficult to have those conversations, because you can't tell somebody, you know, really what to do, but you can share experiences. Yeah. And that's what I love to do, is share the experiences of the guests that have been on my show. And I can talk about Stacey's story, because, you know, this is public domain. So I can say, but look, you know, she started this way. And right. So I'm sure you have those. How did you get your start as an entrepreneur?
Well, I'll tell you, it's all about relationships first, right? That's how we're able to do anything that we're able to do. And it was interesting listening to Stacey, because it segues into how I started, is she started with a relationship, but did you catch the relationship? It was building a relationship with her husband first, right? Like, yes. Actually, he built the relationship with her, because he got her on board with the approach, but right?
So yes, I like that.
So it starts with the relationship. So how I started is I actually sort of fell into it. So I did, I grew up in PR. That's how I got my start. And I was working for a nonprofit, and everybody kept saying to me, you know, you're so young and you have no children, no commitments. Why don't you start a business? This is, you know, you're capable, right? Like they, all of the kudos. And I thought about it and thought about it. And I was like, why not take a risk? Because that's what, as serial entrepreneurs, that's what we do, right? We take risk. And I started a business. I had no experience in the industry. I had the PR experience, but I started working with musicians, which I know you're a musician, Donna, right?
Yes.
So I can't wait to talk about that. So I started working with musicians, and literally I was at Barnes and Noble looking up books on working with musicians, and somebody came up to me and introduced themselves, invited me to a meeting. It was an association for musicians in Wisconsin, which is where I am. Wow. And that's how it all started. Five years I worked with musicians doing PR.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to come back to you because we're going to get some PR tips for our new friend, our next guest, Donna Brown. So Donna is an author, musician, yoga teacher, and retired RN and new friend of the Roundtable Talk Show. Good morning, Donna. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you for inviting me to be on your show. And Andrea, I'd like to thank you for getting involved with musicians. We're an interesting group of people. I've always been a musician, and I've done lots of other things in my life as well. I worked for quite a long time as a registered nurse in a number of different capacities in hospitals and doctor's offices. I've worked in free clinics. I've worked pretty much just in lots of different facilities, and spent most of my life as a nurse, and was not really very happy working as a nurse. And I worked long hours, you know, sometimes 10 to 12-hour shifts, and I would never get out of work when my shift was supposed to end. So just really part and parcel of being a nurse, working as a nurse, working in the medical profession is really difficult. And after working as a nurse, I thought there has to be something better. There has to be something that I enjoy doing. And I decided to branch out and do other things. And basically, the musician part of my life is pretty interesting. I actually met my husband. We were talking about husbands. My husband, who is definitely part of my story, because I met him in a garage, and I like to kind of joke around and let people know that we actually met in an alley, because, which sounds kind of interesting, because the alley faces the garage, my husband's garage, where him and I met. I was auditioning, or I thought I was auditioning to get into his rock band. And basically, I stood outside the garage waiting to get a chance to play. It was all guys in the band, and they were really trying to get rid of this one musician, this guitar player. So I stood there for a good part of the evening. I didn't really get a chance to play, so I got very upset, just stormed off in my Volkswagen and thought, nah, heck with these guys. I don't really need to be part of their band. Next day, I get a call from my future husband, Gary, who invited me back to audition, made it into the band. And we played all over Chicago, because that's where I was born, played all through that area, and stayed together for about 3 years. And I thought, you know, I got to really find a way to make money, because you can't really make money as a musician. And that's when I decided to go to nursing school. And so
it seems like now, just listening to you or listening to your story, that it's an emotional one for you. One of the things that I see as far as a kind of contrast is nurses are known to a certain extent for kind of not having feelings. Like, they're emotional, but they have to hide their feelings. They can't be emotional because they have to take care of the patient. They have to put the patient's care in front of how they feel about what's going on, or how painful or how horrible it may be. But then you have the musician who's known for being very sensitive. Most all the musicians that I know are very sensitive people. You know, they feel the message of the world or what's going on. It usually comes out in music or some kind of ways. Was music an outlet for you when you were an RN? Did it help you with the feeling?
Oh, yes. Yeah, music, well, as everybody knows, music is universal. If you're feeling down about something, you listen to music or you play music. And my husband and I, when we were playing this original hard rock music back in the day, we stayed together for about 3 years, and we didn't really expect this music to, you know, to make a mark in as far as anything in the world is concerned, because of all the greats that we grew up with, listening to the Beatles, Santana, Jimi Hendrix, wow, just so many legendary great musicians that we were influenced by. And I didn't really realize how, after 40 years of just, you know, leaving this music behind, one day I get a phone call from a record producer back in Chicago, and I was living out in Colorado at the time, and he asked me, he calls me up, he goes, "Do you still have any of that music that you created back in the 70s? I'm like, "No. Not really. We recorded that music on crummy cassettes on a crummy, you know, tape recorder back in the 70s. I said, "Why do you want to know?" He goes, "Well, this music is phenomenal. So the only reproduction of our music was a 45 that we produced at the time. Somebody handed him this 45 and said, "You have to listen to this." He flipped. And he goes, "I want to release an album of this music that you created 40 years prior, back in the 70s. Very long story, very short.
Amazing.
This music received worldwide acclaim after he released the album in 2013. People were.
What was the name of the album?
It's called First Step Beyond.
I just like the energy of that. I like the feel of that. When we finish the first step I'm going to take after I get off the show, is to Google First Step Beyond, see if I can get a listen, see if I like it and what's going on. I'm sure I'll love it because just of your energy. I have more questions for you, but I definitely want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who has been sitting so patiently waiting, probably working, knowing her, but waiting for to join the show. But you may, I always say, when our guests return, you may recognize their face, you may recognize their name, their business, their story, but I'll give you two things about this next guest that you will not most likely recognize. Out of all the shows that I've done, there was a show where I felt like I really dropped the ball. Like, I was like, "Oh my God," it was one of the first shows I did. I was nervous, a lot of personalities, and I felt like I said the wrong thing. You know, we were discussing, I think it was like either beating your spouse or like spousal abuse. And I was like, "Yeah, now let's talk to our guest about clowns," whatever it was. And I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't allow enough time for that segue." And I felt really bad. And so I hear this sweet little voice say, it's okay, Sharifa. And then she just goes on to all the reasons on why it was okay and people make mistakes. And I was like, you know what? I can do this show. I can do this. And that was because of Nicole Middendorf. Now, aside from just being a wonderful person, she is the CEO of Prosper Well, a wealth advisor, speaker, and media guest. Good morning, Nicole. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Do you remember that show?
Of course I do. Even though I do so much TV, I mean, it's a lot of it's all Zoom nowadays. Of course. I always remember the fun experiences. And you have such a great personality and just offer such great advice and information for people. Thank you for doing what you do.
You are welcome. Thank you for helping me. Thank you for supporting me because you, like I said, you most likely didn't even realize, but we always use the word pivot, pivot, pivot. And you were on one of my first shows. And that was one of those pivot moments in this show where I was like, can I do this? You know, maybe I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm going to, you know, but you were like, it's okay. And I was like, oh my God, I can do this. We're going to talk a little bit more about Nicole, but the second thing Nicole has done that I love is that when I see a product that I get excited about, I put it all over social media. I tell everybody. And it's not too often that I really see something that I'm like, you know what? I really like this. And again, that was Nicole and her family 401k fund. I saw that and I was like, you know what? This is brilliant. I posted the link. I posted everywhere on social media. We got to get more people doing what you do. What do you do, Nicole? Tell us about it.
So I own Prosper Well Financial. I left Morgan Stanley in 2003 to start my own business. So fast, and I never planned on being a financial advisor. I got into this because I got married right out of college and married someone that dreamt of being a stockbroker and being a financial advisor. And I sold Mary Kay and I sold makeup to the men at the Morgan Stanley office in Wayzata, Minnesota. And they pulled me aside and they said, if you can do this, if you can sell makeup to men, you should be a financial advisor. I'm like, no, that's okay. Like, this is my husband's career. Fast forward now, you know, I've been divorced since 2012, but fast forward, I own a 9,000 square foot commercial building. We just hired a new employee, so we're at 8 people.
Congratulations.
And just, thank you. Wrote my 5th book, Who Pays? Navigating Love and Money. And I'm just here's the book right here. And generally on TV once a week and just a big advocate for people with their finances. And the Family 401k Fund came about. So I'm a single mom. My kids, well, my daughter is 10 going on 18 and my son is 12. And I talk too much about money with my children to the point that it's just, we've had so many unique and fascinating experiences where my kids are telling other people what to do. And one of the things they tell their friends that they need to have a family 401k plan. And what it is, it's just, I got a shadow box. Well, really my assistant got a shadow box, put a label on it. And we now sell them at NicoleMiddendorf.com for people. But the concept is that you sit down as a family and I call them family meetings. And so my kids and I sit down and we come up with, you know, what is it something that you want as a family? It's something as you, as mom and dad are probably going to buy already. But the whole concept is to involve your kids and to do this as a family. So my kids wanted a trampoline. I was like, not happening. They're like, oh, well, they had a family meeting and we're setting up the family 401k to buy a trampoline. So they go online and figure out how much a trampoline costs. So they know how much, what their goal is. And then out of their allowance, they put money in here and my match is a dollar. So if they put in a dollar, I put in a dollar. I encourage every family just to have the budget that fits with what works for you. If your kids put in a dollar, maybe you put in 25 cents or 50 cents, you know, you don't want to spend more than you can afford. But when the kids put in a dollar, I put in a dollar. Once they came up, it was like $550. Once they came up with it, I ordered the trampoline on Amazon. There it is. And the trampoline was actually my favorite purchase because during COVID and quarantine, like it was really one of the life-saving things for me as a break from e-learning for them. So the whole concept then is kids learn what a 401k plan is, like the concept, the term, a match, saving for money, you're communicating as a family. And I just love helping inspire people. And money can be so overwhelming and intimidating. And there's just always little things like this that you can do that makes it so it's not overwhelming and not intimidating.
I think that's beautiful. And one of the reasons why it stood out to me was I always believe that there are cemeteries full of million-dollar ideas. Like, that is my belief, is that most people take these ideas to their grave. And you know, the box itself is nice, it's beautiful, but it's the idea that you said, you know what, let me do something in order to teach my kids about finances, to teach them a lesson, to teach them something that they're going to be able to take on and pass on to their children. And this is about saving. And I think it's amazing. And then you actually took that idea and you said, okay, let me create it. And then you, or your assistant, however you phrased it, but you created it. And that's the part of that you can't always teach as far as an entrepreneur. That's that magic of creating a business, even though it's just one aspect of what you do.
Right. And I feel like when it comes truly from like yourself or being very authentic or being very real, that's where, you know, like I use the phrase, and you said, you alluded to earlier about like, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And if you, and I always say, like, if you do what you love, the money will follow you. And yes. So it just comes from, you know, what is really truly in your heart? What do you value? Because there's people out there that want that same information or want that same product or want that same experience. And if you're doing what you love, it just, it's easy. Or easier, I should say.
I think we learned that from Stacey. Stacey was like, it wasn't all, you know, rainbows and unicorns.
That's the joys of business ownership, really.
Right.
I definitely agree. Now that we discussed saving, the other question I'm sure everyone wants to know is, who pays?
The man, always on the first date. Sorry, Anthony. But I got divorced legally in 2012. We were separated in 2010. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. My best friend from college, he is just brilliant at marketing. And so in 2012, he's like, you know, Nick, like, you need to write a book on dating and money. Because by that time, I think I had two books out and I was doing a weekly radio show. He's like, you need to write a book on dating and money. And I'm like, I know nothing about dating and money. Like, I got married right out of college. I just got divorced. Like, I obviously wasn't very successful. And so I waited a little bit, and the dating for me, when I started dating, that's kind of how I rationalized it. It's like, okay, I got two little kids, but let me start dating because I'm doing research for my book. But fast forward, as I started writing it, coming up with stories, my clients became more vocal, telling me that I saved their marriage. Mm-hmm. And so the Who Pays book is all about being confident in your own finances. What is your own relationship with your money first? And then as you weave in someone else in your life, what's their relationship? And so like chapter 9, it's all questions. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a huge advocate beyond the family 401k. The other thing that I'm a huge advocate of is having a money date. And mm-hmm. so if you're in a relationship at least once a month, and if you are single, have it be with your financial advisor or a friend, but once a month you get together with your significant other and you're sitting down and you're talking about money. And maybe the first date needs to be at a public place. you know, it's anything from credit cards to insurance to taxes to your retirement accounts to your investments to your house, your mortgage. That's where there's so much to money. It can be so overwhelming for people, but it's all about communication and it's all about sharing your values.
We have to go ahead, Andrea.
Can I ask a
question? Yes, I saw you. Yeah.
I'm really curious to know because, you know, thinking back on my own upbringing and money conversations were not had between parents and children for sure. But I don't know if parents, you know, were talking about it. So I'm just wondering, are you finding that more adults are having these conversations and then the adults to their children, like through the 401, the fund, the family 401k fund conversations?
I find it really interesting because I find with everything that happened with COVID, we have a kids in cash program. And I was like, okay, here I am as a single mom with my kids 100% of the time, like trying to have the nanny help me with e-learning. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, if I'm pulling my hair out, there's other parents out there pulling their hair out. And so I decided we took our kids in cash program. And I had my daughter primarily because she's got more interest in this stuff than my son. And I would have her on with me. And so, but the fascinating thing is, out of all the classes and workshops that we teach, because we do ones for people that have lost their job and divorce and, you know, why women and wealth and various different things, but people were so vocal about the kids in cash. Like, oh my gosh, that's such a great program. I should have my kids. I should talk to my kids about money. But the actual follow through really lacks. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think at the most we had like 12 kids on one of the sessions. And so the concept behind it was, is my daughter and I would talk for 20 minutes about money, and it would be this interactive, you know, sessions with kids. And, you know, we'd talk about wants versus needs, or how do you start a business, and lemonade stands, and all, you know, all of those types of things. And to give parents a break for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. But I really find that people want to, but it's that follow through. And it's hard because I'm just like you. Like my mom paid the bills. My parents didn't really talk about money. My dad was given $20 a week as an allowance. He still to this day asks my mom for $20 a week. You know, they really didn't have lots of conversations about money, let alone talk to me about money. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a huge advocate. There's so many kids that are looking at, you know, they want to go to college, but parents really don't talk to them. Like, have I saved anything? What's the expectations about money? What's the expectations about college? And so that's my whole focus, is to start having some of those conversations. And I feel like I'm constantly writing articles to help and make a difference, but I get it. Like, parents are busy, you know, and I'm really hoping that through during this time that people are really figuring out what's important and what's a priority. Or just take the time when you're shuttling one kid from to baseball to track, you know, that you're in the car, that you can have that quick conversation.
I think we definitely need to have those quick conversations more. Who's a parent? I just want to know, Stacy, Dr. Anthony, Andrea, are any of you parents?
Yeah, I'm a parent.
Okay. Do you have conversations about finances with your children?
I do. Actually, I do, and it's great. I love the, you know, the family one, concept that you have. But I actually learned a really good, it's a JAR method from T. Harv Eker. He's a really, you know, good speaker, personal development, but really good with money management. And it's basically, you know, I teach my son with JARs, where you basically have, you know, one JAR for like, you know, a savings account. And then you have, you know, one for, you know, it's basically like a necessity JAR, you know, a savings account, you know, like in like a 401k, which is more like a, you know, something for future financial freedom account type thing. But they have adults, but also there's for children as well. But I think it's good to give them the concept, because you don't learn that in school. Nobody teaches you that. I think it's up to us as parents to, you know, be advocates and try to, you know, teach them this, because, you know, especially now, as we all know, with the COVID-19 and the big financial hit it did to people, but those people that sort of saved and really sort of thought, you know, about this a long time ago, they're in a little bit better situation. But I think it's wonderful to do, and you know, keep up your good work with that. But I think we do need to educate more of our children on this. And even if they can implement it in schooling, having, you know, like, you know, classes that sort of teach that, or even for me in medical school, having something with us, our high loans and everything with student loans. And I mean, you name it, like getting businesses, and, you know, it's a lot to it, but they don't teach you that. And that's why, you know, I think it's great. You know, yeah, start them young, you know, that's great.
Yeah,
I think, you know, also if I could add to it, I think some of the challenge, and I'm also a parent, we have four children, and, you know, I think a lot of people, and I hear it, and I know I feel it with myself. I mean, so many of us as adults feel ill-equipped ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's almost like as an entrepreneur, they talk about the imposter syndrome, right? When you're starting your business, or Sharifa, you were talking about when you were starting your show, and you're like, do I have what it takes to do this?
Yes.
And I find that at so many different points in my career, you know, I continue to question myself, no matter how far, you know, you climb that ladder, or how much, you know, it appears to be successful. I think you always have those moments of inflection, but especially with finance, where, you know, I think so many adults just still feel like they're trying to figure it out themselves. And so mm-hmm. you sort of feel like the imposter or trying to teach your children something that you don't necessarily feel you have a true grasp on. Because look, I went to art school. I mean, so blessedly I didn't have the same loans that Dr. Anthony had from med school, but art school is only 4 years, but they certainly don't teach you anything about, you know, managing a budget or a P&L statement or, you know, how much to save. And I think as an entrepreneur too, I know I feel it, so I'm just speaking from a personal perspective, but that fear of like, well, gee, like, we're not pensioned. Like, how much is enough? How much do I need? You know, am I really the right person to teach my children? And I think, you know, to your point, it's the more you can have these conversations, and maybe you're not a parent, but you're an aunt, you're an uncle, you're a mentor to somebody. So we're all sort of responsible for that next generation. You know, maybe you're a grandparent. I think even just beginning those dialogues, even things as simple as like, you know, one of my sons works for me part-time. So I remember the first paycheck and he was like, wait, what happened to my money? It's like, well, part went to the state and then part went to the government and, you know, part went to Social Security. So when you're old, maybe there'll be something left. But I think those are great lessons for a young person.
It's like, welcome to adulthood. That's like I always say, my kids are 23 and 26 now. And I keep having to say that, you know, my son is like, I just feel like I work and then I just pay bills. I'm like, welcome to adulthood.
Exactly. I know, but you know, and you start to question, and I'm so curious also, like from Donna, but like at what point do you decide you're off the hamster wheel? Like, and you're just, like you said, you're just gonna go make your music or you're moving to Colorado. Like at what point do you just say, you know, I'm gonna just live?
Well, basically what we did when we were thinking about retiring, my husband is a couple years younger than me. We thought, oh my God, well, what the heck are we gonna do? Are we gonna have enough money to retire? My husband retired a little bit early. I was right on the money when it came to retirement. I was ready to retire. And we decided to buy a travel trailer, and just hit the road, sell our house that we lived in for 26 years. And just move from Colorado and travel around the country. And luckily we did that before this COVID thing hit. So we were on the road for about 2 years, took in the beautiful country and enjoyed ourselves. And that's pretty much what we did for our retirement. But now that we found a house in Arizona, we are just kind of staying at our home base right now, living off Social Security, which really doesn't allow us a lot. So this, when you think that you're ready to retire, you're like, oh my gosh, maybe we should have worked a little bit longer to make a little bit more money.
Yeah, that's one of the things I always dreamed of, is just getting an RV and traveling the country. My first job out of high school was working for TWA, for Trans World Airlines. So every weekend I was on a plane going somewhere. I've been to just about every state in the US. I enjoy being able to just go when I want to go. And so my next one might be an RV. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Donna.
Well, I would like to share with everybody that, you can always, no matter what career you're involved in, you can always have that second chance to do what you really love to do, to just really, really do follow your passion, pursue your dreams. And, you know, if you're working at a job that you don't enjoy, you shouldn't really be working at that job. You should be doing really what you love to do.
And Donna, for
me, it was reconnecting with my musical roots and playing music and getting out and, you know, playing in front of audiences that appreciate music after 40 years of obscurity, that seeing the response that we got from our fans was phenomenal. So I'd like to thank everybody who is fans of Medusa, and just thank you for all your support, and just really get out there and do what you love to do, for sure.
Thank you, Donna. I appreciate that. I was just going to say, you know, you mentioned if you're not you don't love your job, you shouldn't be doing that job, you know? So that's one of those times I'm like, okay, people, don't go, everybody just quit all at once and tell their boss they were watching the roundtable talk show and you don't need this job, okay? So I'm just saying, I love the idea, but don't blame me, because people always blame me. They come have these consultations. They ask me my opinion, my advice. I'm the cheerleader. I believe in them. I'm like, yes, you can do it. And I speak to them again. They're like, Sharifa, I did what you said. I quit my job. I'm like, that's not what I said. I did not say quit your job. I said, follow your passion, follow your dreams. So I get it. Thank you, Donna. Andrea, what do you have for us?
I want to first say something about the money talk, and for business owners, because I don't have children, but I can relate to this from a business owner perspective. And that is, a lot of times we kind of wrap our worth around the money, right? We don't charge what we should charge because we think that, you know, that money equals value of our work. And that's not true. Money is a tool, right? It's the thing that we need to do. It's a commodity. It does not equal the value of our work. And I like the point, Nicole, that you have about having conversations of all types about money. And I really think that business owners need to get comfortable having the conversation of money when it comes to their pricing strategies, when it comes to their client engagements, when it comes to the value of their work, not as it relates to the dollar that they're making. So, but Solopreneur Society, we firmly believe that, again, as solopreneurs and small business owners, our biggest differentiator is our personality. That is the one thing that nobody else has. Even if we work in a commodity filled market, if we sell widgets, we sell them different. The more we lean differently, the more we lean into our own personalities. And that's something that we really try to reinforce in every client engagement and with every student that we have. So I just want to encourage everybody to lean into who they are, and do it every single day, and do it without fear. Because like you were saying, both of you, well, actually all of you, to be honest with you, it comes down to taking these leaps of faith, right? Like, you have to jump. If you want to be in business and you don't want to be a hobbyist, you have to take some leaps every once in a while. And you have to have the confidence to know that whether it turns out or not, it's something that's going to move you forward in your path. So being confident about who you are is something we really stress, and building relationships.
Yes, I love it. Thank you. Dr. Anthony.
Yeah, well, basically, I think we all need to have really passion and love for what we do. You know, I enjoy helping people, but really my sole passion and what I really love, and you know, I love being able to help people outside of my business. And that's like those that are in need, like the homeless, you know, people like veterans, homeless, disabled, and low income men, women and children. And, you know, that's what, you know, made me a nonprofit, Shoe Pantry Plus, where I distribute brand new shoes and socks to these people in need throughout the community. So I really enjoy that. And I know you, before, like doing something you love and you don't even know about the time. So when I do that, I could just go forever. And that's what my vision and goal is, to have one of these Shoe Pantry Pluses throughout every state in the U.S. and be able to distribute at least 1 million pairs of shoes to people that really, really need it. And I try to instill that in my son, you know, just the importance of giving back and you know, just trying to show love towards everyone, because we're all brothers and sisters. So I think I would sort of just say that. Yeah.
I think that's beautiful. And I would love to hear more about the 1 million shoes. Would love for you to come back on another episode of one of the shows.
Sure.
You kind of threw that in at the last minute. And it's like, I want to hear about these shoes. You know, I'm a girly girl, like bitching shoes in any form of fashion. And I'm like, what is that? Shoes? Okay. So come back. Stacey, what do you have for us?
Yeah.
Well, you know, for me, really my passion, so kind of jumping off of where Dr. Anthony left off, is to help at this point people create beautiful home environments, surround themselves with things that really uplift them, because I believe that your space really becomes that outward place where that helps you manifest the life that you want, that really can make a huge impact on our mental state, on our energy levels, all of it. So there's, you know, it is a holistic approach. And we heard from everybody on the panel who sort of spoke a little bit about different ways to holistically elevate your life, really shift your life energies. And for me, my passion and my belief structure is that design is such a huge part of that. You know, the interior space that you surround yourself with is such a huge part of that. So I actually just started a new Facebook page at Stacey Garcia. I think it's at Stacey Garcia Inc. on Facebook, and where I'm sharing inspiration, tips about home decor, questions I get asked all the time, you know, even as simple as what's the right, you know, way to hang a drape or how do you choose a color? So, you know, all of those things that go into making great design decisions. And then for those that are listening, sort of on the fence of whether or not to make that leap into entrepreneurship, I want to leave you with this, that I started my first business. I had started planning it in 1999. I incorporated it, but really pulled the trigger, you know, sort of from that planning into actual business, taking out that loan against my home and launching the first collection. A lot of that happened right in the middle of the 9/11 episodes. And we live in New York. It was definitely a scary time. It was, you know, sort of as close, very different, obviously, but as close to this in terms of economic turmoil of that addiction to the phones, addiction to the TVs, addiction to sort of what's coming next on the social media news pipeline. It was one of the best times, I think, that could have been to start a new business, because vendors are willing to talk to you. You have an open ear for customers who want your advice. People are, you know, in the turmoil, I think there's always opportunity. So for those, again, entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs who are thinking about whether or not this is the right time, I think now is the time.
I think everything that was beautiful. They say that more millionaires are made in recessions than any other time in history, because it's like my dad always says, need more will make you do more. That's one of his little country expressions. But I love it. You know, it's like, if you need something, you have to go out, you have to make it happen. But definitely come back, Stacey, because I want to learn more about your designs and your design strategies. And we can talk about that. I don't know if you incorporate any of the feng shui aspects into what you do. It's interesting to me to learn about design. So thank you. Nicole, what do you have for us?
Go do the RV. I just got back. So I have the Live It list. And on my list was not to rent an RV ever, but I added it. And my daughter and I went to Mount Rushmore and Badlands and like everywhere in South Dakota, and just had the most amazing experience and the most amazing trip. So the Live It list is basically the bucket list. And I came up with my own in 2010 when my personal life fell apart. I was like, how did I lose myself? And so I wrote down that I was going to do 12 things, so one a month for a year, because I thought that would get me my confidence back. So one of them was to drive a race car. So I hopped on a plane and flew to Vegas to drive a race car. And the gentleman sitting next to me on the plane thought I was dying because I had written a bucket list and was doing one thing a month. He's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You're so young. Is it cancer? I'm like, no. So my chief marketing officer came up with the Live It list, and we trademarked it. Now, fast forward, I have my own foundation. I grant Live It list experiences, and I still continue to do one thing a month and use it to help inspire people. As you know, it's not just let's get you to retirement. Let's get you what's your Live It list, and let's help you accomplish those things. So add that Live It list to your RV and go do it, because it was a blast.
Okay, so you got to come back so we can learn more about this Live It list, and so you can help me with my Live It list. I have a weird thing on my Live It list. I always wanted to be a music composer. I don't know why, but I want to compose some music, you know, standing there with the band. I want to learn how they do that. I don't know how, but it's one of the fun things I want to do. But I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot. We discussed a lot. Really great show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching the show in the archives. We really appreciate your support, but please don't just watch the show. Support our guests. Visit their websites. Their links are in the Facebook post. Visit them on social media. Follow them on social media. Send them a message. And when you send it to them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.